All right. Hey, what's up? No time to hear the whole intro today. No time for the reads. It is year-end media availabilities at Rogers Arena. The first group of Canucks players already up at the podium, so we go live to them right now.
I had some, a clot in one of my small veins, which wasn't an issue, so I was allowed to continue to play. And then we got another scan after game 5 and 6. I got a scan the next morning after game 6 and showed that there is more clotting that moved into my deep vein. And I think that's, I wasn't expecting that going into that. I didn't really understand, I think, for, so it was like an emotional morning for me. And, to get told that news after, you're giving all your energy with your teammates into these playoffs and really striving and pushing for, the ultimate goal to get that kind of swept out from under you, not to be out there in game 7 with these guys that hurt. And that was pretty much the whole scenario.
Petey, I know that players don't like talking about injuries during the playoffs and while they're still playing. Did an injury have any impact on, maybe your decline in numbers late in the season and into the playoffs?
I've been playing with a bad knee since January, or it's been like a nagging injury. So the longer it went, the more pain I felt. But
is it something that's going to require more off-season work?
No, like it just needs time to heal, time to rest, then rehab as soon as I get back home again.
And Quinn, for you, same thing. I mean, it looked like Nashville did everything they could to be physical on you. Was there any more to what happened there? Were you dealing with any injuries as the playoffs went?
No, I mean, I think that at this time of the year, everyone's feeling tired or has something going on or a little soreness. But, for me, I felt good and good enough to play at my best, and that's what I tried to do.
Rock, just to follow up a little bit, prognosis, any cause for concern moving forward? Is it going to impact your summer and ability to train in any way?
No, I'm on blood thinners, so, I just got to be careful, if you cut yourself or hit your head. But I'm good to train and skate, obviously just with the precautions of not really trying to hit my head or anything when I do skate.
Casey, you played in Nashville on the Friday night. You practiced on the Saturday. I remember talking to you after practice. You were in good spirits. Everything seemed pretty normal. Can you just enlighten us a little bit on the injury and the timeline there of when you knew that there was something that was going to keep you out of that Sunday game?
Yeah, in that game 3, there was a play with like a minute and a half, 2 minutes left where I kind of fell back and caught myself on my groin. I felt a pop. The next day, it didn't feel super great in practice. It was kind of like a precautionary decision, not made by me. I wanted to play through it, but since we were already down Demmer, they decided to go with Artie, and obviously Artie played great, and we came back and won that game 4. So that's kind of what happened with me, and then I was good enough to back up and practice, through the rest of the playoffs. So it was more of just like a one game, got nicked at the end of that game 3, and then just tried to rehab it as best I could and play through it, practice through it, and I felt fine going forward from that point.
Elias, you've long said that you want to be the absolute best that you can be, one of the best players in the NHL. What did you learn from these playoffs that will help you get there in the coming years?
Definitely has made me hungry to get back into playoffs. I believe we have something good building here, but just like on a personal level, just areas that I feel I can be better, and take those stuff into my summer training when I talk to my trainers and try to become an even better player for next year.
And Quinn, your game took a big step this last season. Do you believe that there is another step you can take this off season based on what you saw in the playoffs as well?
Yeah, I think that, I believe that, the work you put in the summer, you can, you know, really get a lot better than, you know, some other players that maybe don't put that work in, and over a course of a couple years that can really help your game. So I feel like this year I was able to, you know, play at a high level, and I feel like I just got to do the same thing this summer and then come back ready to go. And, you know, the next couple weeks I'll reflect and try to enjoy, you know, some time off, and then, like I said, we'll get back to work.
Quinn, you've always contended that you're as good as anybody at your position, but you've always said the playoffs are the true measure. What did you learn?
What's that?
What did you learn in the postseason? Because you've always said that's the true measure.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good question. I think just, again, it's so quick and it's so abrupt. It's been, you know, 2 days. I haven't really wanted to think about hockey up to this point, to be honest. But I think that just learning how tight the game is out there, and it's obviously, you know, I think the travel was different. Obviously, in the bubble, we didn't have to move, but I did, you know, get an experience there with how tight it is and how physical it is and playing the same team over and over. But I think just going to next year, I'm just going to, you know, focus on the same things that I've always focused on and try to, you know, continue to get better as a player in person and become a better leader. And I think all those things will help me and the team.
You've really made progress in the off seasons. I mean, first you wanted to improve defensively. You would do three-on-threes in the summer with your guys, but you'd only concentrate on defense, whether it was speed, angling, stick position. Then you wanted to work on your shot, and you found ways to get it through and make other moves. This was different. I mean, you were targeted in the postseason physically, positionally. How can you train to get better at that, knowing that, you know, you're the guy? You're the guy they're coming at, whether it's single, double teaming. How can you improve on that in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, I liked my game in the playoffs, to be honest. I thought I played pretty solid, and, you know, it would have been nice to pitch in a little bit more offensively, and I think the main thing would be the power play, you know, how we struggled there at the end. But for the most part, I liked my game. I thought I was really solid defensively. Didn't give, you know, much up. And as far as the physical abuse, I think that's just something that everyone's going to have to deal with. And for me, I think that's just continue to, you know, be mentally tough and learn about yourself in these situations and grow from them. And like I said, continue to be a better leader and grow from an individual perspective. And then also, I think that'll help me in my game and hopefully help our team.
Just a quick follow on the power play. I mean, it's kind of an embarrassment of riches. It looks so good on paper. You've always contended this is a top five potential power play in the league. Why did it struggle so much?
Yeah, I mean, there's some frustrations with that, and we should be better. And again, it is really, it's only been 2 days, and I haven't really thought about it too much. But as I'm sure the summer comes along, really think about different things and what we want to see on it and how we can be better at it. And I mean, it obviously is frustrating just because we should be, you know, an elite group. And we did really well against Edmonton in the regular season on the power play. And that couldn't really transfer over to the playoffs.
We got PJ, Thomas, Chris, and Ian. And then
Elias, just with, you mentioned the knee, you know, you were at such a high, like you were the third star of the month for the whole league in January. When you look back at your season now, you know, what's the takeaway for you? What are you looking at from last year as your, or from this season for your lesson for next year?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought of it that much, but the stuff I did well, stuff I can do better, stuff.
You guys still going?
sorry, I asked to say again.
Just, you were at such a high at the end of January, and then obviously this knee problem slows you down. What's, you look back at the season, what's the takeaway you think for you?
Just learn from what I did good, learn from what I can do better, and think us to get some experience in the playoff will only makes us want to get back there again. So I know what I need to work on, and but I think as a whole team, will be, it's good we got a playoff experience. Obviously, we would love to keep playing. But, yeah, I'm excited for what's ahead.
And then Brock,
your season was remarkable, given everything. How do you look at this season? How do you repeat this season next year?
I honestly just think you have to have the same mindset. Like, you got to feel that hunger and that drive, and that starts in the summer. Huggy talked about it. You know, it takes a lot of hard work and focus. And, you know, personally, I didn't think I was great the second half of the year. And I think, you know, that's kind of the next step for me is being a little more consistent. You know, and that's, you know, I still haven't thought about it a ton. Just in my short time of reflection, I've thought about it. But, you know, there's definitely ways to take care of your body or whatever to make sure you don't get, you know, mentally tired or whatever in that time. But, you know, I think I'm really driven, especially, you know, getting this taste with these guys in the playoffs. You know, we were right there. We were so close. And I think that's really exciting, and that's going to continue to push me this summer.
Brock, there's – oh, sorry. I had the order wrong.
Quinn, just wanted to ask, it's your first full season with Rick Tocchet behind the bench. We hear from him every day, but I'm curious, what are some of the things that he's brought to the players that maybe we don't talk about or we don't see now that you've had him for a full year?
Yeah, obviously, you know, first off, really happy for him that with the award he won yesterday. It's you know, incredibly hard to win, and he deserves it. But I think he just the systems and consistency, or I guess you could say that he brought in and with the systems that everyone knew what their job was, and you know, he kept everyone accountable on that side. And then from a human relationship side, he was just someone that you could always talk to, and you know, very approachable, and has been in your shoes, and has that open door policy. So I think with the structure and the person he is, I say those are the two things that are very rare, that, you know, sometimes a lot of other, you know, people aren't lucky enough to have.
Elias, considering this season, the speculation around your contract, that deal getting done, the injury that you sustained midway through, going into a sort of quieter summer, how much do you welcome that? How can you use that for fuel next season?
Yeah, it will be nice to get a break from everything. Obviously, it's been a very noisy season in terms of contracts and, yeah, you guys said. So it'll be nice to just get a break from that, but I'm just excited to get a little break here and then get back on the horse again, train hard, and come in best shape possible for next season.
And then can I ask one more?
Last question.
Perfect. I just want to ask Brock, there's been a lot of talk, obviously, about your goal-scoring totals, but over the years you've been able to work on your defensive game. You had a big defensive bounce back this season, the work at the net front, the deflections, and we almost sort of saw it all come together in the playoffs before your absence in Game 7. When you think about the way you were able to elevate your game, is there something you can take from that in terms of the process that you've put into making yourself a more well-rounded player?
Yeah, I think it just proves to myself that I think I can. There's another level there, and you know, I know at least my line, we took a ton of pride in, you know, when we were playing against Connor and in the playoffs to try and shut him down, and you know, even top lines throughout the year, and you know, it's a role I really haven't had before, and I try to embrace it as best as I could, and just to feel that, you know that we can go out there and we can shut down those top guys. I think it gives a lot to, you know, my confidence, and you know, it's something that I definitely think I can build off of for next year.
Last one for Brock. If I can take you back between 6 and 7, you've been through a lot in your personal life or perspective, but in terms of just hockey and injuries, is that the hardest news you've had about missing a game? And it turns out to be a one goal game. Do you feel like you could have made a difference?
Yeah, of course I feel I can make a difference, you know, especially like talk about the defensive game. I thought we were doing a pretty good job on Connor for most of the series, and obviously home ice, and you can, you know, get your line against them or whatever, but yeah, I'm crushed. Like, I wish I could have been out there with the guys, and you know, obviously one goal game, I felt that you know, it's, of course I'm sitting there and saying, yeah, I could have scored in this game. You never know what would have happened if I played, but yeah, I would have done anything to be out there. And you know, I asked if I could play and try and push them, but obviously the risks are too big. And you know, I had to look, you know, protect my future and don't want, you know, health issues moving forward.
That was the first group of Canucks players here on Locker Room Cleanout Day. Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, Quinn Hughes, and Casey DeSmith. And lots to dig into there. And of course, this is a special edition of Canucks Talk live from Rogers Arena. Jamie Dodd here. Drancer will be along later on throughout the show. I expect the next group, which will include JT Miller, will be up pretty quickly here. So just a couple of minutes to kind of break down some of what we heard. And yeah, you actually heard JT Miller kind of walk into the media room there as Elias Pettersson was giving an answer. So Miller and a few other players I expect will be up pretty shortly. But some big highlights, some big takeaways there. Probably number one, Elias Pettersson saying he's been dealing with a knee injury, playing with a bad knee since January. And that timeline shouldn't come as that much of a surprise, right? When you see how his stats fell off from that point. All right, as I said, quick turnaround here, right back to the podium for the next group of Canucks players.
JT, start with you just after a couple of days to reflect. How do you look back on both the incredible season you guys had, the run you went on, and also the way it ended in games 6 and 7?
Yeah, I think it was a fun season. I think we learned a lot about ourselves as a group, and you look back at the you know, getting the guys together early for camp and stuff, I think it really paid off. You know, I thought our team was really close this year. We got better as we went, you know, learned along the way and came up short, but I think it was a really good learning experience for a lot of guys.
Thatcher, what can you tell us about what's happened with you the last few weeks, the initial injury that held you out of game 2 against Nashville, and then how close you might have been to returning had things gone differently in game 7?
Yeah, I mean, probably, you know, the hardest thing I've had to go through as a player. To play, you know, obviously we've been through some tough years here and finally get the opportunity, and it's always tough watching. So yeah, it was really hard, but I was really close to coming back, and you know, I was looking to probably be available for the next series had we gotten to that point.
JT, wondering, I mean, you guys had a great year. A lot of guys had career highs. It was very, you guys were very healthy during the regular season. What's the challenge of rinsing and repeating and doing, having another great regular season to follow that up?
Yeah, I think that is the challenge in itself. But I think the, you know, the whole point of creating a culture and DNA as a group is that way you're not thinking about that stuff. It just becomes part of the way we play. So we're going to stress that again going into next season. And, you know, we developed a bit of a standard for ourselves as a group. And I think that once you have that created, it's easy to fall back and you know where what the baseline is and what you expect out of yourself and the teammates. So, you know, it's well-deserved. You know, we want to still be playing, but the break, take some time off, and then we'll start ramping up again at the end of summer.
Tyler, you're obviously contract up. How would you like to return to Vancouver, I guess, is my question for next year.
Yeah, I would love to. You know, what we've been able to build here the last year and a half, I think it's really special to be a part of. It's an unbelievable city. The fans were, you know, quite amazing in the playoffs. It was something special stepping out for every game, and I would love to be back.
Question for Tyler. What have you seen... what has been the biggest growth of this group over the last couple of years, where we saw, you know, from 2020 to last year, it was kind of downward trajectory, but then you guys were able to bounce back after this year. So what can you talk about the growth of this group overall?
Yeah, I mean, when the changes were made, I think it was January last year, you know, we found out pretty quick, you know, the standard and the culture were going to change, and they needed to. And I think for guys that were here, I think everybody should be pretty proud of just buying into, you know, where we were trying to take the group and burying our head and working. It's, you know, it's pretty special to be in the position we're in now, looking back to where we've come from. And, you know, in saying that, we just want to keep getting better and, you know, continue that buy-in mindset to where we just keep improving as a group.
Elias, I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about what it's been like for you to come in right at the trade deadline and go on this run with this team here.
No, it's been a lot of fun. Obviously, a great group of guys. Obviously, came in at a good time and got to know a lot of guys during the All-Star weekend and had a lot of fun here. Obviously, we fell a little short, but I thought we all should be proud, and it was a good experience for everyone to, you know, push Edmonton for 7 games in round two. So, I mean, it was great.
No secret that you're a free agent heading into the summer here. What are you looking for in a deal, and did you have enough fun to return to Vancouver?
Be really specific.
Yeah.
Years in salary.
No, I don't know. I mean, obviously, next couple of days, probably talk to my agent and go from there. I mean, it's still pretty fresh, and so I haven't even really put a thought into it.
JT,
yeah.
You're hiding back there. I know that you and Quinn and the leadership group really kind of dug in last summer, right? And had talked to each other about making this season different. And obviously we saw it was. I know talking to Patrick Alvini says, you know, it's a great season, but it's important to remember you lost your last game in the second round. How important is it now not to be satisfied and not to be complacent or think, well, we did it this year, next year we'll cruise past 100 points again? How much hunger and intensity does there need to be to take yet another step?
I think that, I can't speak on behalf of everybody, but I hope that, you know, that taste of the playoffs and seeing Vancouver in May and what it's like to play a game 7, you know, puts a hunger in a lot of guys' stomachs and shows that how close we are and at such a quick turnaround, I guess, from last year. And, you know, we have at the end of the day, we have a really good hockey team and we have a lot of good qualities. And these opportunities just don't come around very often. I've learned that in over the years of my career. And, you know, I was spoiled with playoff hockey as a kid. And then all of a sudden you go 5 years without it. And then I'm, you know, 31 years old. And when you look at it like that, things happen quickly. And I just really hope that, that is going to be a challenge, is not taking it for granted and raising the bar again, because we could feel good about what we did this year, but at the end of the day, we still lost, like you said. And, for me, it makes me want to work even harder knowing that we're a goal or two away from Final Four, right? So it's going to be a good test for us.
Thatcher? Just based on how your last few seasons have gone injury-wise, would you support limiting your workload in the regular season?
That's not really up to me. So I'm sure I'll sit down with Ian and the rest of the coaching staff and evaluate kind of the best way to move forward with that kind of thing. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see.
And Elias, as you head into the off season, how much weight do you put into culture, fit, coaching when you decide where you want to play next season?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot. Obviously I really enjoy my time here, and like I said earlier, we'll see what happens. Obviously we'll fall a little short, but there's a really good group here, a lot of good players, and obviously we would like to play longer, there's a lot of aspects in the place. And
Tyler, question for you just about the coaching staff with guys like Adam Foote, Sergei Gonchar around, and this whole staff. It felt like this is the best defensive style we've seen from this Canucks group, especially with this core of players. With the coaches that you guys have, how beneficial are they for you for just not necessarily changing your game, but finding the best part of your game defensively?
Yeah, they were awesome. I've said it a bunch, but especially when talking about our D-core, there wasn't a lot of guessing for us stepping out on the ice. they held us very accountable. They'd come into the rink every day with constant reminders, things that we can get better at. And, you know, I thought that communication and that approach from Futter and Gaunch on the back end, you know, helped all of us out.
Thatcher, one for you. The very nature of your position puts a tremendous strain on the body and the movements that you guys have to make in today's game. When you talk to Ian, do you have to change anything structurally in your game, or is it more off-season maintenance? How do you approach the off-season?
There's a certain way of looking at it. You know, going into, you know, next season, you know, maybe I can tweak a couple things system-wise, but, you know, I'm not going to try and reinvent my game or anything. You know, obviously, I put a lot of work in the summer and during the season, maintenance-wise, and, you know, that's part of the frustration when, you know, something like that does happen, knowing how much work you put in to make sure that doesn't happen. So, you know, just try and keep learning and growing in that area and, you know, do everything I can to stay healthy.
Can you take something from it? Like, you're not an anomaly. I mean, goalies around the league suffering the same ailments. Can you take something from that? Like, I'm not this guy who's injury prone. It comes with the position.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel good regardless, not being able to play, especially in the playoffs. So, I mean, it's a physical sport. Anyone can get hurt. You know, obviously goalies are, you know, probably have a little bit different injuries than the players do, but, you know, they happen, and it's something you got to deal with.
JT, you know, 100-point season for you. Obviously, you've done a lot of good things, and a lot has been made this year about your personal growth and maturity, and you've kind of downplayed it at times, saying, look, a lot of good has gone on here, and, you know, we're winning, and maybe that's why, but have you been able to kind of see where you're at in your career and your importance, you know, as kind of the emotional heartbeat of this group and how you've taken that step?
Yeah, I really do believe it's a fine line. Like, you know, when you're winning, my emotion's accepted, and when you're losing, it is certainly not. So I just think that's why I downplay it is, you know, I am who I am, and I just think that what comes to mind is the staff here has helped me embrace who I am instead of run from it. You know, it was good that I'm kind of wearing my heart on my sleeve and a little louder, but help me, you know, channel it. And it's not like, hey, don't be like this guy. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't look into it that much. I'm just trying to do my job. And if I do my job, it gives our team a better chance of winning. And if everybody does that to a man, I just think it makes everybody look better.
Thatcher, can I ask you about the goaltenders that played in your place? And obviously you developed a really close relationship with Casey. But you also went through a similar situation to maybe what Artie goes through next year. There was a time when you were asked, hey, more time in the American League, or would I rather be here, and you wanted to be here. How do you see that situation playing out? And just talk a bit about what those guys did when you weren't available.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say enough about both of them stepping in like that. Obviously, Artie was fantastic, you know, played his ass off for this group. And, you know, I tried to talk to him as much as I could. I didn't want to get in his way or, you know, be overbearing. It's a lot on his plate. But, you know, I felt like I was able to kind of chat with him here and there. And even if it's just a good morning, a tap on the ass or something, you know, it might help him out. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen next year. Obviously, that's not my decision. You know, I've been fortunate to get really close with Casey, and you know, we have kids that are similar age, and our wives are close as well, and that's been great this year. So yeah, we'll see.
And just GT, looking at the power play in the playoffs, were there things you guys realized now that you could have done differently, you would like to try to institute for next year? Are there lessons you can draw from this moment?
Yeah, no question. Like, we, you know, the power play was disappointing. I mean, I think that we all would have agree. I don't know what the guy said earlier, but I mean, we had chances to change the course of games and we didn't. And inevitably, that's, you know, our habits weren't good. Well, you know, their habits were better than ours, especially in the Edmonton series. I think that they outworked us. It had nothing to do with the puck luck or anything.
you know, they didn't let us enter cleanly ever, and they're wasting a lot of time. I don't know. Our standard or whatever you want to say about the power play could get to another level, no question. And I think we all know that. And we could have been a bigger part of the playoffs, and we just weren't effective. I just talk about creating. It's not about the goal all the time. It's just creating momentum for the team. And I feel like sometimes we suck the life out of the building, and that's on me. I mean, I take a lot of pride in the power play, so we'll be better.
Thank you.
All right, that was the second group here on Locker Room Cleanout Day, media availability live from Rogers Arena. It's Canucks Talk, Jamie Dodd here. Drancer, of course, is doing the pressers. He'll be along a little bit later in the show, but that was JT Miller, Tyler Myers, Elias Lindholm, and Thatcher Demko up to speak. The first group was Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, Brock Besser, and Casey DeSmith. So we'll see how much of a break we get here before the next group is up. Another four players. We expect to have about six panels of four players here going to about 12:30, then a little bit of a break, and then at 1 we'll hear from Rick Tocchet and general manager Patrick Alvin. So quick takeaways from that set of players and some of the answers or some of the questions they were asked. Obviously, two pending unrestricted free agents in that group in Tyler Myers and Elias Lindholm. And you heard from Tyler Myers specifically a really open answer about how much he'd love to return to Vancouver. Says, you know, we've really started to build something here. Fans are unbelievable. I would love to be back. Also talked a lot about the standard and the culture that's started to be built here. And somebody else who also had plenty to say about that and joins me now. You just heard from him at the podium. It is JT Miller. JT, thanks for doing this, man. First of all, how are you?
I'm well. We had a little fun yesterday, so I'm here doing the end of the year stuff, and I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure, and you know, it's been a couple of days now since the season ended, and as you said, you got to have a little fun, had a little bit of time to reflect. Have you had a chance to kind of just step back and think about not just the season ending, but kind of everything you guys accomplished from training camp to the end of the season here?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bittersweet, I think, and mixed emotions, but for how far we've come as a group, I think we've taken tremendous strides, and I hope that it makes our end goal seem a lot more clear now, having that taste. And yeah, we did a lot of good, but it sucks losing Game 7, going one game away from the conference final. So tons of good to take from this season, no doubt.
And it's one of those things about the NHL, about pro sports, right, is like only one team ends really happy at the end of the year, right? And Whether it's losing in the playoffs or missing the playoffs, there's always that sense of disappointment for the other, you know, 31 teams in the NHL. How does it differ, though, this year, right, having been in the playoffs and, as you said, being so close to the Final Four versus previous years where it was, man, we got to get into the playoffs next year, right? Like, how does it feel different this year compared to previous seasons here?
Well, I just think, you know, we didn't really talk about expectations too much going into this previous season, but you got to think that, you know, being in the playoffs was a goal of ours, right? That's obviously somewhere we wanted to be. I think we caught a lot of people by surprise, maybe even ourselves, with how with our potential of, you know, we led the league a lot of the year in the standings and won the division. And, you know, like I said, one game away from conference final. So, it really is tons of good to take from that. But I really hope that, you know, within our group, and I have no doubt that we're a lot hungrier now than we were going into this year.
Yeah, and one of the things that certainly the players in your group talked about, I know the previous group as well, like a theme that they were emphasizing is, okay, we had the taste of the playoffs, and that's just going to make us even hungrier, right, to get back and take those next steps. We all saw how much the team progressed under Rick Tocchet going back to when he came last year. What do those next steps look like, right? You're getting hungrier, and now you want to raise the bar even more. How do you go about doing that in the summer and going into next year?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's, you know, guys deserve a little bit of time off. You know, I know that there's teams still playing that we would love to, but right now, I mean, take some rest. But I think that we all understand, you know, getting the guys to camp earlier last year, coming together, that should be, you know, part of the expectations now. You know, that's just like an everyday thing, like brushing your teeth, like Rick always says, it's the habits. And, you know, we still have habits that we can do more consistently to make us a better hockey team. And I think when we do that, the bar just keeps getting higher and higher for us.
You set a career high in points this year, and you were also all year and then even into the playoffs against Connor McDavid, first choice to go against the other team's best players, right? And did a really, really good job on that side of things as a center throughout the year. How much does that mean to you to not only have the individual production you had this year, but also to be relied on like that for your team in those big moments?
Yeah, it's cliche, but I mean, I think it's a testament to if you play the right way, most times than not, you get rewarded offensively. I mean, I feel like, you know, I play with Brock a lot of the year. We don't cheat for offense.
Yep.
you know, hardly at all. Like we play the right way, and you know, we're not big shot total guys. We, you know, we're definitely a quality
yep.
line more so quantity. I mean, I think we care a lot about taking pride in playing against the other team's top line, because if you keep them off the board, you give your team's chance a lot bigger chance of winning. So it was fun. I know something I really relish and enjoy is playing against the other team's top players. And I didn't think that I'd, when I was younger, have that opportunity, and to have that now, I feel really lucky, and I feel like I really want it. It motivates me.
You mentioned Brock, and obviously you guys paired together for so much of the year, so effective, and then the news that he's not going to be able to be in Game 7 with you guys. He talked about it earlier, just what a blow that was for him. How difficult was that for the team to hear a guy, you know, longest tenured Canuck, who's been through those battles, been through the tough times, had such a good year, was playing so well in the playoffs, and then the really tough news that he wasn't going to be available. How hard was that for the team, for you to hear and process?
Well, man, I mean, for the team, I mean, you don't have time to worry about that. You got to move on, right? It is what it is. It sucks, but, you know, you feel for him because of the work he's put in, and obviously a career year, and you, like everything you just said, I mean, he deserved to be in that game and in that moment, and, you know, talk about somebody that has changed their game to play against the other team's top line, and, like, I think we both evolved in that way, and, you know, he's like my right-hand man. We played every single game together almost for, like, 2 years, so it's, you know, we're good buddies. It sucks. You know, I feel for him. He deserved to be in that game.
Yeah, no doubt. We all see, you know, we watch the team every game, and we see how it looks different on the ice, right? But another big part of this season was Quinn Hughes officially becoming captain, right? And really the new leadership group, yourself, Quinn, Petey, Demko, coming to the forefront. How did it feel different off the ice for you as part of that leadership group this year?
It wasn't really different for me. You know, I was... It doesn't matter if you have a letter for me,
sure.
But you know, I've had a letter for 3 or 4 years now, and when Quinn got named, you know, I called him right away. I mean, obviously before you guys knew, but I told him, I'm like, I just don't. We both said the same time, like, we don't want anything to change. Like, we just want to keep going,
yep.
and keep playing. And you know, I thought the strides that Quinn made as a leader and as a player this year were amazing. You know, he's so much potential still yet, and I think he'd be the first to tell you that. And he can just be one of the best players in the league. And the fact that he leads by example, he's a great listener. I think that's one of his best qualities, is he can listen really well and retain a lot of information. He's still so young. He seems so mature to me, but he's still such a young player in this league.
Okay, so last question here. Last summer, U.S. Open qualifying for you, right? Obviously, you missed that this year, and
My home course actually held it this year.
So, really?
Yeah.
All right.
It was on May 2nd, so I
was going to say you missed it, right?
I did,
so,
yeah.
But I'm sure you're much happier with this
Absolutely.
Arrangement.
You don't want to be able to play in the qualifiers.
No. But anything planned special this summer, or haven't had time to think?
No. That's just one round that, you know, if you're lower than like a 1.4 index, you can play. It's just for fun, and. You know, well, we do a little couple golf things with some buddies, but other than that, nothing serious.
JT, really appreciate the time. Congratulations on an awesome season. Thanks for doing this. Have a great summer.
Thanks, guys.
That is Canucks forward JT Miller sitting down with me here at Rogers Arena after talking to the general media and just sharing a little bit more perspective on what changed for the team this year, what he wants to accomplish going forward. And we'll go back live to some more Canucks players at the podium.
Like this group and this team has what it takes to be in those final games?
Yes, I mean, I do. I think that the personnel's there. You know, you can debate, you know, should pieces be added, should pieces be taken away, should pieces be changed. But ultimately, you get to a certain point of the year or a certain point in the playoffs, and yes, sure, maybe some teams are better than others, but ultimately... most teams have a pretty equal chance in once it gets going, like once the series gets going. So listen, we had as good of a chance as anyone and obviously didn't get the job done, but I think that it should put a lot of there's a lot of positivity there to build off of.
Ian Cole, you are the go-to guy this year because been there, done that, felt everything. You told us for weeks and months what the playoffs were going to be like, especially for the newbies. And you guys, at the end of it all, had 11 guys playing in the first playoff. What did you take from it? What kind of growth did you see? And how should that bode well? Because you can tell these kids forever what it's going to be like, and they went through it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I pretty much similar answer, but you know, essentially, yeah, listen, we grew a lot. We matured a lot as we went. Guys played the first playoff games. You know, it's tough to kind of convey what the playoffs are like until you've done it. Using words doesn't quite do it justice. Usually, you know, you don't have that experience until you experience it, right? So, you know, I think guys learned a lot, and, you know, there are guys that were like, wow, this is really hard. And you're like, yeah, it is. And I think we learned that every game, every series, everything's hard in the playoffs. I mean, it is all year long, but to the nth degree come playoff time. So I think that it's something, lessons that were learned that we could certainly grow on moving forward.
Phil, for you, obviously contracts are going to come down to dollars and term, but can you discuss a little bit what playing with Quinn meant to you and that fit and how much of a factor that could be in your decision?
I mean, it was awesome, but playing with Quinn, he's a great player and a great guy, so he made it like adjustment for me come here to Vancouver really easy, and it was awesome.
Will that factor in at all to your decision?
Yeah, sure. Like, I mean, factoring, I'm restricted, like, so there is not much I can do. Like, you have to talk to someone else about it.
Dakota, for you as well, just the fit question. You know, you're getting into your late 20s now, right? So you only have so much time to get that contract. But what this coaching staff was able to bring out in you, the fit with Garley and some of the guys you played with in the middle, how much does that matter to you, as you mentioned, building off what you'd done?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was a great time, you know, great room, and it made hockey a lot of fun every day. So, yeah, for sure, that's, you know, you want to be somewhere where you're liked and you mesh well with the organization. So, yeah, that's, you know, I love it here, like I said, and all the guys in the room mean a lot to me.
Ian, is your hope to be back here? You've basically been on a different team, what, 5 years in a row, so... would you like to?
I've seen the hockey DB. Yeah. Listen, I'd love to be back. It's a great team, fantastic group of guys. You know, like we have talked about throughout the course of this interview, like, I think we learned a lot. I think we matured a lot as a team. I think there's a great foundation here to build off of, and it's something I'd love to be a part of.
Carson Soucy at the podium, the latest group of Canucks players to address the media here at Rogers Arena on locker room cleanout day. And I didn't get to hear all of that. They went on while I was having a conversation with JT Miller there. But some highlights as tweeted out by Brendan Batchelor. Dakota Joshua saying simply, yeah, I want to stay, of course, pending UFA. And that's a lot of what we're curious to hear, right, from these players on locker room cleanout day is, you know, there's a lot of key UFAs for this team. Who wants to be here? Who's a little more circumspect, right? And as we said, Tyler Myers, very, very upfront. Yeah, I would love to stay. Talked about how amazing the city is. Talked about, you know, the culture and everything that they're building here. Elias Lindholm playing a little closer to the vest. Obviously doesn't have the same history, doesn't have the same tenure with the organization that Tyler Myers was, but Dakota Joshua, very much, I want to stay. I want to be here and build on what just happened. All right, it is Canucks Talk here on 650, Sportsnet 650, playing. And yes, I did have a bite of banana bread. As somebody texted in, are you eating on air, bro? It was poorly timed because it was just as I was ending and they threw it back to me. But now joining me here, Ian Cole, Canucks defenseman, after speaking to the media. And Ian, first of all, thanks for doing this and thanks for having spending some time with me. How are you today?
Doing well. Would actually also love a slice of banana bread.
Yeah, so I thought I had a little bit more time. I stopped at Starbucks on the way here and I was like, okay, they're talking at the podium. I'll just grab a bite here, and then I hear, okay, that's enough now, and it froze back to me. So I knew I was going to get an interview. I had to hopefully not be talking to you with my mouth full, so I did my best. I did my best.
Well, clearly, you didn't learn in school that if you're going to bring snacks, you got to bring enough for the whole class.
Next time, I will bring enough. I'll go get the Timbits for the whole group, and I'll have them here.
Honestly, you'd be anybody would come in here and do an interview.
I was going to say, I'd probably get
not
a lot
just
better
the bums
answers.
Like myself, you know?
I'd probably get a lot better answers if I had the box of Timbits. All right, so. Just disappointing end to the season, obviously. Whenever the season ends, it's tough. There's that emotional letdown. Have you had a chance to just kind of step back and think about what this group accomplished from the beginning of training camp to the end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned it in media. You know, from where we were at the beginning of the season and where, you know, either, you know, rightfully so or wrongfully so, where what people thought of us. You know, I remember when I got here and more than once, I mean, heck, maybe 5, 6, 7 times I got asked by the media, like, you played on a lot of really great teams. Like, why would you want to come here? Almost insinuating, like, well, this team sucks. Like, why would you ever want to come here? And then being like, oh, it must have just been a money thing, huh? Like, no, like, I think this is a great hockey team. I think we have a ton of potential. I think we have great players on this roster. We have great personnel. And quite frankly, like, I think it was a team that nobody really gave much credit to. So, you know, on one hand, you could say, did we outperform our expectations? Maybe, but I think the expectations were wrong to start the year. I think that, you know, you're not going to get a, you know, there's, I don't know, there might not be a lot of self-reflection on the preseason expectations of us, but did we play well? Did we do better than people thought? Yeah, we did. So, you know, there's a reason why our coach is winning the Jack Adams. There's a reason why, you know, guys are going to, you know, get contract extensions and make, you know, probably more money than they did before. You know, and guys deserve that. So, listen, guys played well. We came together as a team. We ironed out a lot of the wrinkles that had been here with the Canucks for, what, I guess, what, 5, 6 years or whatever it was. Yeah, I think it's overall it was a very good year.
You mentioned the coach, Rick Tocchet, winning the Jack Adams officially announced yesterday. You know, you've obviously, as you said, you've been on a lot of really good teams. You've played for a lot of really good coaches. What stood out to you about the job that Rick Tocchet did this year?
Well, I think as just kind of generally speaking, the job of a coach is, one of the jobs of the coach is to get everyone on the same page, right? So, you know, I remember when I started my career, and this is a bit of a tangent, but, you know, you start out, you'd be on, you know, 2 or 3 teams in training camp, and all the regular guys would be mixed up. And
yep.
And now, more recently, you see it basically as like, okay, this is our team. We're going to start practicing as our team as soon as we can so we can iron out all these things. And we're going to spot in guys we think have a chance to be there. But ultimately, like, we want to get our team together and on the same page as fast as we can. Like, we want to be able to hit the ground running come game one. We don't want to have, you know, guys figuring each other out 10 or 15 or 20 games in. And I think that our coaching staff, obviously talk very much included in that, like, got everyone on the same page right away, very quickly. And Talk's a passionate guy, man. I mean, talk about someone that's not only has done it in his career, but also done it as a coach, as a head coach, as an assistant coach. You know, and quite frankly, all of our coaches, from Talk all the way down through the whole coaching lineup, if you will. I mean, we have some fantastic coaches here, guys that really know what they're talking about. And aside from their actual playing experience, like, are really great coaches and know how to take information, synthesize it down, and relay that in a very coherent way that guys can understand. So, ton of credit to the coaches, getting everyone on the same page. It's been a great group of coaches to work with. They're fantastic.
We talk so much about playoff experience in this sport, right? And obviously, we all knew you were the most playoff experienced player for this group going into the postseason. And, you know, I heard your answer there about, hey, you can tell guys about what it's going to be like, but they kind of have to experience for themselves and figure out how hard it's going to be. In practice, if you're a young player, you get that first taste. You know, you guys played 13 games. We're really close to going to the conference finals. How do you take that and improve, you know, put yourself in a better position to succeed the next time in your playoffs? Like, practically, what does it mean to have that playoff experience? How does it set you up going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, it's the understanding of just how hard things are going to be and how long of a process that is, right? Like I mentioned it very briefly in there, but kind of to expound on what I said, which was like, I had a guy come up to me and he's like, man, like this is so hard. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And he's like, it's like I'm playing the biggest game of my life every other day for 2 months. And it's like, I am drained. And it's like halfway through the first series. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like it is. It's the biggest game you've ever played every other night for basically as long as you can play. And, you know, the margin for error is razor thin. The pressure and the stakes are through the roof. So it's an absolute pressure cooker. And the level of desperation needed to be successful is higher than you can kind of you can relay to people. They need to feel it. You need to understand, like, hey, like I do need to raise my game in whatever degree I can. And you know, I think that you see this kind of take form in a lot of teams that have won have had to lose first to figure out, okay, like these are the steps I need to take to be better. And I think like in that, call it, you know, trajectory of a team, right? Like this team had lost for a couple years and had been, you know, very disappointing to people in this market. And like we figured out a lot of things this year about what it takes to be a good team in the regular season and be a good team consistently and not only beat good teams, but also beat the teams that we should beat consistently. And that's part of it, right? And then it's like, okay, now how do we win in the playoffs? Okay, we got a taste that we won a series. And then it's like, okay, now how do we win the next round and the next round and the finals? Like, how do we continue to grow? And I think you see like these trajectories of teams that have done it. And I think there are some similarities between teams that have won that had to lose first to figure out kind of how to navigate that path.
You know, you talked about your decision to join this team before the season and saying like, hey, no, this team has potential to be a really good hockey team. And you look at it with, you know, the guys like Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Thatcher Demko. They obviously had those top end of the lineup players. So you knew there was the talent there, right? And the ability those guys had, having played against them. What did you learn about this team as a whole and just some of those top end players specifically over the course of the season?
Yeah, I mean, very, very impressed with our, you know, call it elite players on this team. They are fantastic people. They are extremely driven to be successful. They want to win. And I think I mentioned at the beginning of the season, like, I think that there are a lot of guys in this organization that are really sick of losing hockey games. And I think you saw that, like there was a, you know, from day one in training camp, from day one of the season, like guys were very driven to kind of flip that script. And it started with our big boys. It started with all of our, you know, all-stars. And I mean, and that's, you know, kind of, you see that concept kind of come to fruition in the All-Star game. We have, you know, six all-stars with Lindy, right? Which is insane. So the talent, the high-end talent is there. And it was our job as kind of supporting cast to try to support and kind of bring the rest of it along.
How much pride do you take in the defensive turnaround specifically, right? Because that was one of the major sticking issues with this team in previous years, and then you guys really became one of the best defensive teams in the NHL, right? And, you know, for the blue line, for you as an individual, how much pride do you take specifically in that part of it?
Yeah, a ton of pride in that. I mean, I don't know this, I guess, because I haven't been around for, you know, multiple years, but at least the narrative that I seemed to, as I understood it coming in, was like, the PK is terrible, our defense is terrible, we get scored on way too much, like we can score a ton of goals, but man, we are terrible defensively and we just give up way too much. I mean, quite frankly, that was almost 180 degree flip.
Yeah,
right? You know, I mean, you look at how the season ended up and where we went, you know, and we have, you know, internal analytics here, you know, but, you know, for the second half of the year, the internal analytics said we were a top 3-2-1 PK in the league. The amount of chances we gave up, the shots we gave up, now didn't necessarily translate as well as we would have liked to actual percentages, but I think we were way better PK-wise and certainly defensively than anyone gave us credit for. And maybe by the end of the year, we started to get more and more credit for that. But it's something that, you know, I take a lot of pride in. Obviously, I'm not exactly an offensive juggernaut per se, so you know you got to hang your hat somewhere. And I think that over the course of the year, the consistency and the buy-in defensively was exceptional.
You know, I'll let you go, but just to your point about the PK and the improvement, I thought you really saw it in the playoffs, right? The Nashville series in particular, it was excellent. And then obviously, like, Edmonton's going to get theirs, but there were also stretches where you guys killed off some big ones and killed off a bunch in a row against a really, really good power play. So it definitely showed up in the playoffs. Ian, really appreciate it. Thank you for sitting down with me and making some time here, and have a great summer.
All right, I'll bring some banana bread
and
back next year.
Next time I'll have Timbits, all right?
Yeah, perfect.
Next time
done.
I'll have Timbits. That is Canucks defenseman Ian Cole joining me here live at Rogers Arena. It is end-of-year media availabilities for the Canucks. We're hearing from some players. We'll hear from a few more panels. And then later on, we will hear from Rick Tocchet and Patrick Alvin. We'll take a quick break. But, yeah, I want to address the scandal here on Canucks Talk just before that Ian Cole interview. Yeah, I was trying to sneak in a quick bite of Starbucks banana bread, right? And I thought I had a little bit more time. And yes, as a result, you guys heard some nasty mouth chewing noises on the air. And I want to take accountability and apologize for that. And here's the thing. I'm flying solo here. I don't have a co-host to rag the puck for me while I finish swallowing my food. And I also didn't want to go to an interview with Ian Cole with a mouthful of banana bread. So look, guys, I was in a tough situation. That's my bad. I did my best. I apologize. I know nobody wants to be hearing that on air. Okay, we'll take a quick break. More players are due to come up to the podium here throughout the day. And then, of course, later on, we'll hear Rick Tocchet and Patrick Alvin. Lots more coming up. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd holding down the fort right now. Drancer will be along a little bit later. We're live from Rogers Arena here. End of season media availability day for the Canucks. We've already heard from a lot of the key players on the team. Still more to come. And then later on today, probably around 1 o'clock, we expect to hear from newly minted Jack Adams Award winner, head coach Rick Tocchet, and newly minted Jim Gregory Award nominee for GM of the Year, Patrick Alvin, at 1 o'clock. And, of course, you'll hear that live here on Canucks Talk. While I was having a conversation with Ian Cole there, some other players for the Canucks were up at the podium, including Nikita Zadorov. And, of course, I know you guys want to hear from Big Z. So we'll get that audio turned around here momentarily and play that portion of the availability back when we have a chance. But before we do that, just a chance to kind of hit some of the key takeaways, key things we've heard from players throughout the day so far. And of course, if you were ranking storylines you're most interested in, questions you most want to hear, answers you most want to hear coming into this day, in terms of the players, probably number one would be, what are we going to hear from Elias Pettersson about how his season ended, about his injury status, if any? And Elias Pettersson saying that he was playing with a bad knee since January, a nagging injury. The longer it went, the more pain he felt. He also said it won't require any sort of procedure in the offseason, just needs time to heal and time to rest. So, as I was starting to say earlier on in the show, that makes a lot of sense when you look at the timeline of where his production and his play was in the first portion of the season and where it went after January and, of course, into the playoffs. Playing with something that was making it a lot more difficult for him to produce makes a ton of sense and shouldn't really be a huge surprise. Now, we can go have the conversation about, okay, well, nagging knee injury, but you're still in the lineup. Could he have found ways to do more? Yeah, that's an absolutely valid, fair conversation to have, right? That's one of the things that the Stanley Cup playoffs is all about. As Quinn Hughes said a little bit later, everybody's dealing with something at that time of year. Everybody's banged up. You still have to find a way to help your team. So I think that's a valid conversation. But if you're, I think you also now have to take into consideration the context of dealing with this thing that lines up perfectly with when his production really started to decline. And assuming he is able to get that knee, the rest, and the time to heal that he said it needs over the summer, I would expect Elias Pettersson will come back next year and immediately be that hyper-productive 95-plus point type of player, 100-plus point type of player that he was last year, that he was in the first half of this season. But of course, still questions are going to linger for Elias Pettersson around the playoffs until he gets back there, until his team gets back there, and he has a better performance once they are there. Now, the other interesting quote from Elias Pettersson was him admitting that, yeah, it's going to be nice to get a break. It's been a very noisy season with his contract. And then, as he said, how poop I've been the last 3 months. He didn't say poop, though. He said the R-rated version, or at least the PG-13 rated version of that. So pretty upfront, pretty candid from Elias Pettersson. And honestly, there's been such a heated debate among fans here and among media members in the market about Pettersson, about his mentality. And I think that type of quote, just owning it, being frank, being really upfront, saying, like, yeah, I know how bad I was the last 3 months, guys. Don't worry. I think that should go a long way. I think being that candid and being, again, that direct about how he knows his performance wasn't satisfactory, that should go a long way to buying him some rope, I think, from buying him some runway from people here in the market. But again, it's all going to come down to what he does next time this team is in the Stanley Cup playoffs. All right, before we get to the next panel here, I'll just quickly run through some of the answers from pending unrestricted free agents that we've heard so far, because, of course, that's a big theme going into the summer. Tyler Myers, very, very honest, very direct, says he'd love to return. Really special what they've started to build here. Shouts out the city, shouts out the fans, says he would love to be back. Dakota Joshua, same thing, or similar thing at least, saying, yeah, I feel really comfortable here. I think I mesh with the organization. Obviously, he took a big step forward in his career this year. He'd love to be back as well. Elias Lindholm, no surprise here, playing it pretty close to the vest, says he's going to talk to his agent. Everything's still pretty fresh, hasn't really thought about it. You know, went on to say a little bit later that, yeah, he really enjoyed his time here, leaves it with, we'll see what happens. Ian Cole, again, love to be back, great team, fantastic group of guys. So there's some of the answers from the pending unrestricted free agents. But right now, let's go to the podium for a panel, including Nikita Zadorov. This was already recorded, so pre-recorded from the podium, including Canucks player Nikita Zadorov.
Connor, let's start with you here with a couple of days to sort of reflect on the way the series ended, but also the tremendous season you guys had. How do you look back on it as you sort of look at moving forward now into the summer?
Yeah, obviously it was a tough ending. Didn't like our game in game six. You know, I think, you know, we had the series in control a couple times, obviously being up 2-1, didn't play great in game four, then being up 3-2 and not playing great in game six is probably why we're sitting here today. You know, anytime it goes to game seven, it's kind of a coin flip, and, you know, we had a chance at the end to tie it, and, you know, and doesn't go in, but, you know, we didn't have, you know, that killer instinct or the performances we needed to close a team out that we should have in game four and six. So something that going forward, you know, if we're given that opportunity again to get in the playoffs and a chance to win a Stanley Cup, that we'll have that lesson. Obviously, it's a hard you know, learned lesson, but going forward, we have to have that killer instinct.
Nikita, how do you look at your time since arriving in the trade from Calgary here in Vancouver as you head towards the summer and some uncertainty in terms of where things are going for you with a contract needed?
So just a personal question, yeah. I mean, it's been great. Obviously, getting traded to one of the top teams in the league and just to get a chance to play with these guys, I mean, it was unbelievable. About 5-6 months for me, you know, I had fun every day. You know, it's awesome when you can do what you love and then you also come to the rink and you enjoy the group of the guys in here. You know, like past month, it's been so much enjoyment and fun and just a great hockey, great time spending together on the road and at home, you know. So it's been, I mean, I'm proud of the guys, I'm proud of our team, what we achieved through the whole year and where we're at right now. Obviously, we feel like, well, in this room, feel like we felt a little bit short at the end of the day. But it's been unbelievable experience in here. Nothing to complain about ever.
Nikita, I think your stock rose significantly in the playoffs. Just, I mean, you did everything for this team, which maybe prices you out of being re-signed here. How you talked about how much you loved it. How badly would you like to come back to Vancouver?
Why do you think I pressed myself out of here?
Well, maybe your contract may have gone up a
little bit. How much do you think I should be making? Yeah, like, you guys I don't know where you get those numbers from, the trees. Yeah, I don't know. You got to stop listening to Edmonton reporters who's reporting the contract negotiating. It's only between my agent and Patrick. And obviously, I love here. Hopefully, we can work something out.
Connor, there's probably going to be a lot of changes coming back next year. It seems like, you know, there's a lot of free agents on this team. There's always change. What's the challenge of whatever group you come back with next year to not only doing what you did this year, but taking it up a notch? I mean, you guys improved so much.
I'm not too worried about changes. That's not up to me. We have a great, you know, management staff here, and they'll make the decisions that, you know, we need to have a great hockey team. But for us as players, you know, we just have to realize, you know, we won the division, went to the second round, lost in game 7. We're not a secret anymore. We're a good hockey club. It's not going to get any easier. We're not going to surprise teams. It's going to be hard to win games in the regular season. Every team's trying to get better, and we have to get better. Guys that are coming back have to get better. Everybody's going to have to improve, because it's going to be a lot harder to win games. So it's obviously going to be a fun challenge for us, being in a different situation. A lot of teams, fight to get to where we are, but it's going to be a hard year for us, and we just have to be ready from day one. Not the hunted or whatever the saying is, but we're going to be a team that everybody's aware of, and we got to be ready for that.
Pius, your first look at Stanley Cup playoff hockey after 4 seasons in the National Hockey League. How much fun was it, ultimately? Yeah, you scored the big goal in Nashville. Sort of what did you learn about yourself and the ability to play when the stakes were the highest?
Obviously, you know, the atmosphere was unbelievable, especially at home. I think every single game, it was joyful to play in. Playoffs, it's playoffs. I think we've talked about it before, but I mean, I did play at home. It's a different league, but it's the sense of it, the same mindset, the same. You got to play the same way. It's just better players. But so it was a lot of fun. I see you liked it, and the crowd was just was great.
And how about your first year? I don't know what you thought when you signed here in terms of the way you were going to be used, but I think you came in as a natural center, then you played a fair bit on the wing. But is that just life in the National Hockey League for a guy? Like, you've got the skill set that you can sort of fill some holes and play wherever they need you to play?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the past few years. I've done that. I've done that back home as well. It just kind of always depends what's needed and what the coaches see fits best for the lineup to win that game or whatever the series. And that's just the way it's been. I don't mind, like changing that, those things. It doesn't bother me to one game to that side. I think it's, for me, it's a positive thing.
Teddy, how much did you enjoy the role that you were handed to play under Rick?
Yeah, it was great. I think we all enjoyed playing under Rick. I think, you know, he's obviously a big part of our success. And, you know, all the coaching staff and, you know, support staff and the Sedins and everything. A lot to learn from, and I think it was, you know, it was great. Obviously, a lot of fun when the team's doing well and winning throughout the course of the year. And I think, you know, probably the best part was just, like, honestly, the locker room, like Z was saying. Like, it was so much fun to come to work every day, and just a lot of great times together in the room and on the road. And I think that's what made this year very special, is just kind of the atmosphere in there.
And Nikita, how did this team help you be the best player that you could be, as I think we saw you play?
Well, when you're playing with great players, it helps a lot. You know, I think when you're playing under great coaches, it helps a lot as well. You know, I had good coaches in the past, not some good as well. So it's like I've been to a few teams for sure, so I have something to compare to, unfortunately. It's, like I said, I feel like the mentality from the day first when I got traded, where we at, you know, like Garley said, it's hard to, like, win division, make playoff, have a good regular season, and then go also try to win the Stanley Cup. It's hard to win in this league, and I feel like there's definitely a lot of learning process in this team and this organization through this playoffs. I think guys going to learn from this playoff run a lot, and I feel like you just get more obsessed from winning, you know, when you just, all your focus was for past 4 weeks about winning the Stanley Cup, go win the hockey game. What I got to do on the ice, you're going through your mind, you don't even think about outside life, and it makes you obsessed with that, and there's an even bigger motivation after the loss like that to go have a great summer, then come back and be a stronger team or stronger individual as well.
Teddy, every team needs a lot of tools in the toolbox. How well suited do you think your game was, whether you're playing the first PK pairing, moving up and down? You have a history with the hockey ops group here. How much do you want to repeat this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I enjoyed my time, you know, a lot, like I said earlier. So I think some of those decisions are kind of out of my control. Great place to be. Really enjoyed my time here. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to get another crack at it with this group. I think, like C said, like the way we went out and having a taste of some success, I think, makes you hungrier. I think the bar has kind of been raised here as far as going into next year and what everyone's expectations are, what success would mean here next year. So it'd be great to kind of be a part of that and the group kind of building going forward.
Late in the season you came in midway through the season. So can you talk a little bit about just how the fan base kind of embraced you, what you and maybe your family saw, and where it does it compare to anything that you've experienced in the past?
Well, like I said, hockey in Canada is different. I can compare it to Calgary, but I feel like Vancouver fan base is way bigger. Calgary is not even the number one team in Alberta, so it's kind of like, well, I mean, it's obvious. Like, there's more Edmonton fans because they have a bigger history through the years, right? But Vancouver is a different level. You know, the fans were so hungry to see the playoff hockey at home. You know, it's been 8 years, and there's so many great traditions. Obviously, like, this organization hadn't won the Stanley Cup before. That makes it even probably putting more pressure on you as well. But it's been unbelievable. I feel like the whole city, round up around the team during the playoffs. It was fun to see, you know, the my kids going to school. My family loves it here. It's been just awesome time. Like, I just enjoyed it every second of it, for sure.
Connor, just your second time in the playoffs. Did it light a fire under you? And did it teach you anything about maybe what you need to do during the off season to get back there and perform at a higher, maybe even a higher level?
No, you just want to get better each and every day and try to get better as a player this summer. The only thing is just, you know, you want to win a championship, and if you get better as a player, you give your team a better chance, you know, maybe make one more play late. You know, work on your wall work, maybe make a play, get it out of the zone. You know, just something that can help the team. In the playoffs, it's so tight. And, if it gives me information on what to work on in the summer, and because I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen that type of play before. So that's about it. But, no, just the only fire would be just a win. You know, you get close. But in reality, we only got halfway there. So we got a long ways to go.
All right, that was Nikita Zadorov, Connor Garland, Pius Suter, and Teddy Bluger having their year-end media availability there. And no surprise, Nikita Zadorov, the star of the show, as he tends to be, whether it's on the ice or talking to the media, he knows how to earn the affection of Canucks fans. And in the course of that press conference, taking shots at not just Edmonton, but also Calgary, Nikita Zadorov, right, saying, hey, yeah, I've played in a Canadian city before, but, you know, Calgary's not even the number one team in Alberta. So it's a lot different here in Vancouver. It's a lot bigger. And, you know, earlier saying, hey, you guys got to stop listening to Edmonton reporters talking about how much money I'm going to make as an unrestricted free agent. And, you know, it's easy to seize on those lighthearted kind of swagger moments from Nikita Zadorov. But, you know, you also just listen to him and he clearly understands at a pretty high level and really impressive considering how new he is to the organization, how new he is to the team. You can tell he understands what the Canucks mean to the city of Vancouver, to the province of British Columbia, right? And I thought it was really interesting to hear him reference, you know, one, the excitement from the fans for playoff hockey, how much that meant to him, how much he enjoyed it, but also saying, you know, look, this team hasn't won a Stanley Cup before. And that amps up the pressure, but it amps up the interest. And I think implied in that is the team that does eventually bring home a Stanley Cup to Vancouver, the reaction is going to be really unlike anything you'd experience across the NHL, even in other Canadian cities, if you're able to do it. I think Nikita Zadorov demonstrating, again, that he really gets this city, he really gets this fan base, and he knows what this team means to them. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. Thomas Drantz will be along a little bit later. But, look, Zadorov speaking glowingly about his experience here and the fan base and all of that. But, you know, he's not going to come out and say that he's definitely staying. Obviously, he said he hopes he can be back. But also that's between his agent and Patrick Alvin. And there'll have to be negotiations there. That's a similar theme for a lot of the players throughout the day, right? Teddy Bluger saying, you know, hey, I really liked the role I played under Rick Tocchet, would love to kind of come back and have another crack with this group, be part of what they're building going forward, but also acknowledging that those decisions are out of his control. And one of the big themes beyond, you know, the questions about the unrestricted free agents and the guys saying they really want to come back and be a part of this group again, one of the themes, the consistent questions that's coming up, and I think it's a good question, is, okay, you took such a big step forward as a team this year, playoff success for the first time in forever, winning the division, all of this, right? We all know it. The team looks completely different on the ice. You took this huge step forward. How do you follow that up with another step, right? As Connor Garland said towards the end there, you know, we still only got halfway. So there's a lot they can do to improve, to get better. Still, a lot they need to do. And one of the things that stood out to me from Nikita Zadorov was the experience of being in the playoffs. As he says, you get even more obsessed with winning because you're living it day in, day out, every other day, and that will drive you to be even more obsessed coming back next year. Okay, we're going to take a break here. We'll react to what we heard in totality from the Canucks players. We'll get set up for Rick Tocchet and Patrick Alvin. Drantz will join the show on the other side. It is Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back here to Canucks Talk Live at Rogers Arena on end of season media availability day for the Canucks. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the mobile Kintec studio here at Rogers Arena. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you, in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Now joining me, of course, my co-host, Canucks Insider. He covers the team for The Athletic. He is Thomas Drantz. What's up?
I'm also Lazarus today, for anyone who listened to Halford and Brough. I sounded like I was at death's door, partly because you and I had some beers last night.
Yeah.
But when you showed up and we started having beers,
You'd already been having beers.
Yeah. Yes. And so I woke up and, like, I sounded so bad on Halford and Brough this morning that I literally got texts from real life friends asking me if I was okay, which is how you know.
It's a bad sign.
Yeah, which is how you know your radio hit, just like you killed it. So anyway, here I am back from the dead.
Well, I will say part of our conversation last night revolved around, like, are we just getting old? And I think you've definitively answered that 100%. Question just there. Yeah. Yes, we are, in fact, getting old.
I am decrepit.
All right, so we've heard from the players. We'll take a little break here. Not our show, but I mean the Canucks proceedings will take a little break, and then Rick Tocchet and Patrick Alvin will address the media.
Gotta finish exits first.
Absolutely.
big picture takeaways from hearing from the players after this Canucks season.
Well, you got to start with Pettersson.
Yep.
Okay. Knee injury since January. I tweeted out the splits, right? 72 points in his first 55 games. And then over the remaining 40, 27. That's it. Like that, or sorry, it was actually 23. 23 over the remaining 40. That's all you need to know. Like, that's all you need to know. We've been talking about it. I kind of had been hearing a variety of things. I'd never heard knee, actually, somehow. So that's why I don't report these things unless I know them. But, you know, it was so clear. It was so clear from the lack of power on his shot that he was battling something. And it was so clear by the fact that he couldn't get inside on anybody. Right? I mean, this is a player. This is a player. He is so not perimeter-oriented when he's on his game, right? Like, his whole game is calibrated to get inside of people. It's why he draws penalties at the rate he does. You know, it's the precision with which he does it is just the most noticeable thing about his game, and it disappeared. It disappeared in the second half, and to hear him disclose that it was a knee injury that had gotten progressively worse and more painful for him to play through, I mean, that just speaks to...
It makes a lot of sense given what we saw from January on.
I think it answers probably the single biggest lingering question around the Canucks in the second half of the season, but especially during the playoffs. And then I thought it was interesting, you know, obviously he referred to his game as the S word, which I will not say, but the, you know, the fact that he's looking forward to not hearing about how bleep he's been for the last few months over the course of what promises to be a much quieter, much more relaxed, much more recovery-focused offseason for Vancouver's, you know, highest-paid forward beginning next season, or beginning July 1.
Yeah, and that answer I thought was really interesting because it's kind of a... I think it was just a very
thank you,
candid...
because it was to my question.
I know
it
was.
An answer to my question.
It was a very kind of candid, direct answer from Elias Pettersson, both saying he's tired about hearing it, but also admitting that he was playing like that, right? And I think, again, that's the kind of thing that goes a long way to maybe getting some of the fan base back on board with where this player is going. But, you know, you put it together, right? And him saying, yeah, I had this knee injury from January. As you said, you look at the splits in his season and how it went. It lines up perfectly with his decline in production. Also, of course, said it's not going to need a procedure or anything. Just needs time to rest, time to heal. And, you know, obviously we don't have the exact details of what that looks like. But it's easy to take all of those facts and kind of envision a scenario where he comes back as old Elias Pettersson next year and starts to pile up points at a ridiculous rate again.
Oh, take that to the bank. I've been workshopping this take for a bit, and I'm going to hammer people with it now. I think I would bet the over on 10.5 points by which Pettersson to lead all Canucks skaters in production next season. Without a second thought. Would not hesitate to smash that. At minus 110 or better, even. Like, you don't even need to give me long odds. I just believe that in my gut. And, you know, look, 72 points in 55 games, that's the level that this guy's at. He wasn't at it in the playoffs. It obviously was costly. Moving on, I want to frame another big picture takeaway as a dichotomy. So this is really two big picture takeaways. But it's been fascinating over the course of, let's say, the last 4 or 5 months, the way that, you know, and think about this as a graph, right? the effectively negative correlation in Nikita Zadorov's stock spiking, culminating today with him taking random shots at Edmonton reporters for literally no reason, completely unprovoked, and then the fan base of the Calgary Flames, also completely unprovoked. But phenomenally funny. And also, he's dead on, by the way. Support for the Flames, I've often said it, has always been a mile wide and an inch deep relative to the passion that you'll find in Edmonton and Vancouver. And in contrast, you had Hronek, you know, making it difficult, right? A guy who's been quoted maybe 3 times all season. You know, I sort of asked him the first question, and it was a question about unrestricted free agency, and I tried to do it in a way that was as non-confrontational as possible. I can't remember who had just answered it, but it was another pending UFA. And I was like, same question for you. And he said, same answer. which I guess was playful, but, you know, also it's like, man, I'm trying to give you an out to just, like, make a statement so that we can move on with our lives. So I rephrased the question. He makes me rephrase it again. Like, he's like, I didn't understand it. Can you ask it again? So I ask it again and, you know, sort of gives me a non-answer. And then Jeff Patterson, he sort of struggles with a give and go with Jeff Patterson as well. And Patterson calls him out for it. And if you go check Twitter, I've almost never seen this. There's an awful lot of Canucks fans siding with a member of the Vancouver media. I've never seen that before. And so that sharp contrast, I think, is matched by the usage we saw in the playoffs, where Zadorov became a top pair defenseman for this team in terms of actual minutes played at 5-on-5. And Hronek's minutes were reduced. And Zadorov was the guy scoring the big goals, and Hronek was the guy who we barely saw use his slap shot. Probably some signal there, too, mm-hmm. by the way, although Hronek would not cop to having any sort of injury.
Well, and I know Dan Murphy on Twitter was saying, you know, he thinks that's a bit of a fib, right? Yeah,
well, I think it was down the stretch, but from what I was hearing during the playoffs, I think it's one of those, like, sometimes guys play through an injury, and it actually gets better.
Mm.
And what I'd been hearing since sort of the middle part of the Nashville series is that that was the case on Hronek's particular ailment, that he really wasn't limited by it. So, in any event, these two players, the Canucks have really difficult decisions to make given the probable price of the brick this summer. They're different situations, right? Hronek's an RFA with arbitration rights. Zadorov's a pure UFA. They're different players. One's lefty, one's righty, right? One guy has played higher up the lineup mm-hmm. over the course of, like, a larger sample of games. Like, no one would debate that Filip Hronek's a top four guy. Maybe some people would quibble with him being a top pair guy. Whereas you'd find people in the industry who would call Zadorov, like, a 4-5.
A 4-5, yeah.
Or,
sure.
like, best suited on your third pair. And so there's been this sort of coming together, and I just felt like today was, like, one last affirmation of this, right? The playoffs, the deployment, the Q rating in the market has kind of converged to a point where it feels like fans are really clamoring for Zadorov to be extended, and Hronek's star has kind of faded, especially relative to where it was
oh, yeah.
in the fall.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, right?
So I felt like today sort of really cemented that for me as another major takeaway.
Well, and I was saying just before I went to break, right, I thought Nikita Zadorov being very upfront about, yeah, this team's never won a Stanley Cup, and not saying it in a derogatory way, but acknowledging how that amps up the atmosphere, right? Mm-hmm. And he gets it, right? Like I think what I was saying about Zadorov is he understands this city in a way, considering he's only been here, what, like 6 months?
Yeah.
5 months, right?
Yeah.
In a way that's pretty rare for players to do.
Well, I think he welcomes the show.
Yeah.
I think that's the key. Like, so many people in hockey are content with, like, the knitting circle status that the NHL has relative to the other North American sports teams, but absolutely does not have here, right? So what do you hear? You hear, you know, Rick Dhaliwal asking agents all the time on his show, like, what about that Vancouver social media? And what about, you know, like, there is a level of pressure, there is a level of scrutiny, there is a level of intensity that comes with playing in this market that is absent anywhere else in hockey. And people will say, well, what about Toronto? And it's like, yeah, you know what the difference between Toronto media and Vancouver media is? Toronto media like their team and don't mix it up. Like, it's a totally different vibe. It's like, there's like an upper Canadian politeness that informs the coverage of those teams. And the cold prairie towns, like, they're just happy to have pro hockey. No offense. Nikita would agree with me. Vancouver, it's like, we have this totally, we talk about on this show even, although I think we, you know, try and sort of elevate the conversation. We're not trying to do hot takes, although people think I'm trying to do a contrarian act all the time. Like, part of what we're trying to, part of the way the tone of coverage of this team in this market is, like, we cover the Canucks like they're the Los Angeles Lakers on First Take. And yep. There's no other Canadian market that really, like, apes that American-style, drama-filled style of coverage. And there's something about Zadorov where it feels like he, you know, grew up in Moscow where hockey's a big deal. He's been around a variety of players. He's been around Nathan MacKinnon. He's played for this Calgary team that won the division. He's been in Buffalo, you know, another, like, extremely eccentric hockey market where, I mean, I always refer to it as the eighth Canadian market, and I think that's true given their level of media scrutiny mm-hmm. and on and on. The primacy of the Buffalo Sabres in that marketplace. So, you know, I just think he gets it. I think there's an understanding. I think Zadorov is one of those guys who welcomes being in the show And especially when things are good in Vancouver, there's no bigger show in the league. Period.
All right.
Maybe the Leafs.
Before we get...
Maybe the Leafs.
The
Habs a little bit, but it's split because of the language thing.
Yep.
It's totally different. And I just think, again, in Toronto, it's like, it's just a different vibe. There's maybe more scrutiny, but it just feels like there's a different level of, like, almost, I don't want to say respect, that's the wrong word, but there's just a different veneer of sort of politeness in the coverage and conversation.
Okay, before we get on to some more takeaways and some of the individual player comments had, something that's coming in a lot here to the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650, variations on this question from Rob and Victoria. So why wouldn't the Canucks rest Pettersson the last 7 to 10 games for the playoffs if he was dealing with a nagging knee injury that needed rest to get better?
I don't know.
Yeah, and I anticipate...
I wish I had an answer for
you. I anticipate that question will be put to Rick Tocchet and Patrick Alvin, or at least in some variation of their, you know, just questions about what was the thought process behind the management of Pettersson's injury.
Well, and the move your feet question. Right? I mean, that was a constant refrain to a player with a knee injury. I think that's hard to understand as well. Maybe not as hard to understand as Ilya Mikheyev on the top line in Game 7, but, you know, among the things that I think we're going to be interested in hearing from, you know, a pair of organizational leaders who are up for GM of the Year and Coach of the Year, right? So I want to make it very clear I'm not criticizing the accomplishments of this team. But, like, the pressing questions I'm expecting Rick Tocchet to be asked are, from a critical standpoint anyway, are, can you run the power play again next season, given we have learned over the course of this year about the enormity of this job, right? Some Game 7 lineup questions, I think, now that the light of day has kind of come and gone and... You know, Ilya Mikheyev with Pettersson and Miller. I don't know. The conversations I'm having with Canucks fans online, I've been asked a lot, like, what with that? I expect that to be asked. And I'm sure the handling of Pettersson's injury.
Yep.
You know, so I think those are sort of the critical questions that Tocchet will be asked. As for Patrick Alvin, you know, mostly it's going to be forward-looking. What are your plans? Will you exercise a buyout this offseason? Because we always have to ask Alvin that now after the OEL thing. We always have to ask him that on media day. And, you know, UFA priorities, conversations with various agents, and on and on. I mean, that's going to be the substance, I think, of this 1:30 availability with a pair of Canucks leaders. But, yeah, I mean, playing Pettersson, like the Winnipeg game especially, standing out where everyone else was rested. Here's what I'd suggest to you, though. Don't ignore that, like, Besser was banged up. Also, who rested. Don't ignore that JT Miller was probably banged up. You know, like, there's lots of players who were banged up that we'll never know about.
And as you said with Hronek, sometimes you play through something and it goes away.
Yep.
It gets better.
Yep.
Now, we don't have the details beyond knee for Elias Pettersson, so we don't know. I think it's a very valid question for people to come in.
We do know from his answer that it kept getting worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least got harder to play through from a pain management perspective, which is also... sort of part of this, right, is, you know, and I still think, and not a question that I was going to ask a guy in that environment, but I do still think one area for growth is, like, how do you hit that, you know, 80% level? How do you change your game? How do you have to outfit your game for the probability that if you get to where you want to go, you're playing 100 games a year now, right? If this team is going to every year be in the second round, you have to be preparing for not 82, right? Not 82 plus preseason, but 100 games. And you're never going to be 100% by the conference final. Like, look at Dreisaitl and McDavid and how convinced we all were as that series went along and how convinced Edmonton media was, you know, with due cause that those guys were playing hurt. And then look how effective they were, right? There's a level you have to be able to hit of effectiveness regardless of sort of where you're at, and I just think Pettersson's game is so based on precision, right? He's not the fastest guy, he's not the biggest guy, he's the smartest, most skilled guy when he's on, right? And I just wonder if his ability to hit the level we're used to is maybe impacted a little bit more by being hurt than Besser, who broke his hand in the Nashville series, according to Murph, and then, you know, was dealing with a clotting issue throughout the Edmonton series and remained Vancouver's best player. Or, you know, if close to it anyways. Yeah,
yeah,
or if a player like Miller was hurt. Right?
Yeah, and on Pettersson, you know, people texting in as soon as the knee injury comes out, like, oh, that's not an excuse. And it's not about using it as an excuse, because I think you're right. And I said earlier,
there's still things you can do to find ways to be productive to help your team win, right? And I think it's very fair to say, look, you were on the ice. You were healthy enough to play. It was the playoffs. You have to find a way to give more. I think that's still a very fair conversation, but I do think it's really, really vital context for what we saw from Elias Pettersson, not just in the two rounds of the playoffs, but going back again to January when he said that injury started and then really started to limit what he was able to do.
Can we circle back? I just want to circle back on Zadorov really quickly because Eric Francis just... our colleague,
yes,
of course,
Sportsnet.
At Sportsnet, based in Calgary, just quote tweeted my Zadorov quote about taking a shot effectively at the fan base. And this is how high Zadorov's Q rating is among reporters, right? He says, Zadorov simply can't resist taking a shot at a city or fan base whenever he gets the chance. Love it.
He says love it?
Yeah, even the Calgary reporters are like, this guy rocks! Which is a preview, by the way, I'd think. In the event that Zadorov leaves and like returns here at midseason and just like delivers some sort of paymaker quote, people will
Everybody's
be like, exactly. And then people are going to be like, why does the Vancouver not have our backs? And it's like Zadorov City.
Zadorov is like a wrestling heel. It's too popular. Like, oh, but now we tracked it.
I wish I'd thought in real time because he was up on the dais with another pending UFA. Yep. I wish I'd had time to ask him if Teddy Bluger tried himself out of Vancouver. I want to talk about one other picture takeaway. Talking about killer, right? Talking about how badly they played in Game 6, especially of that Oilers series. We're probably sitting here because of Game 6 because when you get to Game 7, it's kind of a coin flip. Connor Garland is team. Very good teams win big games. Great teams don't play them. Right? Like, that's it. 1-3 in elimination games, or a chance to advance games in this playoff run is sort of the only blemish that I think you can look at from a team that played exceptional defense, had core players who leveled up all postseason long, showed balls in terms of the way that they were able to come back, fight back. Like, they were never dead. In games, they never felt dead. In games, when they were up, they were good at locking them down. You know, there's so much positive to take from this playoff run, and I think that's sort of the one thing. Quinn Hughes talked about the learning experience side of this too, because learning experience, like as a overarching theme, I think hung over a lot of the commentary from Canucks players. And Quinn Hughes talked about managing the travel, because in the bubble, we stayed in place. We didn't move. Well, to me, that's Nashville. Right? To me, that's how worn out certain players on this team looked until the energy of the crowd brought them back into it after Garland converted on the McLeod giveaway in Game 7, right? The fact that this team had maybe expended too much energy in part because they hadn't been able to nip their opponents in the bud. And there's sort of multiple examples of this even beyond the 1-3 record in with a chance to advance. Right, and by the way, the one they won was off a one-goal win where Pugh Suter converted with 99 seconds remaining in Game 6 in Nashville. Like, that game easily.
And in terms of killer instinct, I would extend it also to, you know, we talked to all playoffs about how they didn't lose consecutive games until 6 and 7, but they didn't win consecutive games, 3-4 in Nashville.
That's
it. In Edmonton, if they could have won that second game in a row, either to go 2-0 or 3-1, that completely changes the series.
And they were there. Like, you saw how emotional Miller was when they dropped that game. They knew they'd missed a shot. Like, they knew. And I'd add this, Game 3 and 4 in Nashville, they won those games. Those were maybe their worst two performances of the playoffs. Like, it's those two games plus Game 6. It just happens that Game 6 was the only one they actually lost. So, you know, I think that overarching theme of the learning experience, but I also thought the way that Garland enunciated it, the idea of the killer instinct, the idea that, you know, this is a player, pretty consistent 50-point guy for the Canucks, a play driver, and already he's having big picture thoughts just less than a week out from the club being eliminated about like luck proofing the next run, right? How they move forward from here in terms of what actually matters, what can you actually take away, and like immediately diagnosing sort of the one blemish on what was otherwise a pretty spectacular playoff run and season as a whole for this franchise.
A lot of people texting in asking about Quinn Hughes and whether he said anything about his injury status, and the takeaway from Quinn Hughes was everybody has something going on, but he says, I felt good enough to play my best. That's from Quinn Hughes. And so declining to go any further than just everyone's dealing with something.
And aside from, you know, he would have liked to produce more.
Mm-hmm.
He noted,
felt pretty good about his game.
He felt pretty good about his game. He should, by the way. I mean, I talked about it yesterday, but the fact remains that the Canucks outshot their opposition by 17 with Quinn Hughes on the ice and outscored them by 1, 5-on-5. In Quinn Hughes' 250 minutes in this playoffs, they were outshot by 76 in all other minutes and outscored by 2. Like, would you like more production? For sure. But if you are turning your ire for this team's lack of goal scoring to a defenseman, you're kind of missing the plot.
And so much of the production dovetails with the power play.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Quinn Hughes is not going to be over a point per game if the power play is not clicking, and the power play wasn't clicking,
yep.
Right? So, well, those two things are very much tied together.
I think there's also, like, a sharper contrast because of the fact that Evan Bouchard was so productive in that mm-hmm. second-round series in a way that, like, Roman Josi wasn't in round one, right? Like, you came out of round one, and it was Quinn Hughes versus another Norris nominee defenseman, and you would say Quinn Hughes was the better defenseman in that series. And then you get to a point with a fringe Norris nominee, like a guy who was on my ballot, to be totally honest, and probably, honestly, I kind of regret not having in my top three Bouchard. And Bouchard has all these points. But again, it's just like Bouchard eats off of an environment created by Edmonton's elite forwards, mm-hmm. and he's perfectly calibrated for it, and he's really, really good. But Quinn Hughes makes the environment for this team, and that's a totally different task. I think Quinn Hughes is right to say that he played well. And I think the injury concerns that occasionally lingered in that Nashville series, you know, that's another critical question for Tocchet here, which is why did Quinn Hughes' usage diminish if he wasn't hurt?
We will take an early break here, so we'll make sure we're back in time to hear from head coach Rick Tocchet, as well as general manager Patrick Alvin, when they speak to the media year-end press conference day here at Rogers Arena, coming up next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.